thousands of additional bombs to Israel, despite regime's ongoing campaign of genocide in Gaza. And leader of Yemen's Ansar Allah movement says the U.S. is complicit in Israel's Gaza genocide and shares its criminal intention to exterminate Palestinians. Hello, everyone. Leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution has held prayers over the bodies of seven Iranian military advisors killed in Israel's Monday attack on Iran's embassy in Syria. Ayatollah Khamenei prayed over the bodies after meeting with the families of the martyrs. Bodies arrived in Tehran from the Syrian capital earlier Thursday. The official ceremony will be held Friday, which coincides with International Quds Day. The Israeli attack killed two senior Iranian military commanders and five accompanying officers who were there in Syria on an advisory mission. 6 months into Israel's campaign of genocide in Gaza, and the regime's unrelenting attacks continue to leave a trail of death and destruction. Dozens of civilians have lost their lives after Israeli air raids and artillery targeted homes and gatherings of those displaced. Airstrikes in Beit Hanun in northern Gaza have killed a paramedic and left three others injured. And in central Gaza, Israel's bombing the city of Deir al-Balah left two people killed. Additionally, two other civilians were killed and several injured in an airstrike on the Nuseirat refugee camp. To the south, Israel's artillery targeted the vicinity of Nasser and Al-Amal hospitals, injuring a number of civilians. Four Palestinians, including two infants, were killed in an attack on a home west of Rafah. The Palestinian Health Ministry says regime forces killed 62 people and injured 91 others in the past 24 hours. Death toll from Israel's Gaza onslaught has now topped 33,000, with nearly 76,000 Palestinians injured. Head of the charity Doctors Without Borders has slammed the Israeli regime for its deliberate attack on aid workers. Christopher Lockyer was referring to an Israeli airstrike on Monday that killed seven international aid workers associated with the U.S.-based charity World Central Kitchen in the Gaza Strip.
Humanitarian workers are protected. No ifs, no buts. We do not accept the narrative of regrettable incidents. We do not accept it because what has happened to World Central Kitchen and MSF's convoys and shelters is part of the same pattern of deliberate attacks on humanitarians, health workers, journalists, UN personnel, schools and homes. This is not just about implementing an effective deconfliction mechanism. Our movements and locations are shared, coordinated and identified already. This is about impunity, a total disregard for the laws of war, and now it must become about accountability. It not only shows the failure of deconfliction measures, it shows the futility of these measures in a war fought with no rules. That these attacks on humanitarian workers are allowed to happen is a political choice. Israel faces no political cost. Instead, its allies enable this brutality with impunity and provide even more weapons that maim and kill civilians indiscriminately.
Major international aid groups have called for an immediate Gaza ceasefire. They say countries that are arming Israel are also obliged under international law to protect people from the regime's atrocious crimes. Aid groups, including Oxfam and Save the Children, also slammed Israeli regime for restricting aid deliveries into Gaza, saying it's now almost impossible to work in the besieged territory. Meanwhile, president of the medical charity Doctors Without Borders blasted the West for arming Israel. Isabel Defourne said U.S., Britain, and France are all complicit in what is going on in Gaza, which amounts to nothing less than genocide. She said Israel is waging war on an entire population, which is trapped, deprived of food, and massively bombed. She added that Gaza is progressively being made unfit for human life and has passed the threshold of absolute horror. The U.S. has approved transfer of thousands of additional bombs to Israel as the regime presses ahead with its genocidal war. A new report citing a Biden administration official says that the package, which was approved this week, includes over 2,000 unguided and 1,000 smaller diameter bombs. According to the report, munitions will come from previously authorized supplies and are not slated for delivery before 2025. But last month, the U.S. State Department did authorize the transfer of billions of dollars in bombs and fighter jets to Israel. Reports say that Washington has quietly made more than 100 weapon sales to Tel Aviv since the regime launched its onslaught on Gaza on October 7th. Armed supplies fly in the face of U.S. call for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza and amid increased international outcry over Israel's heinous war crimes across the territory. Yemen's Ansarullah leader says the U.S. is complicit in Israel's genocide in Gaza by providing the regime with weapons, experts, and intelligence. Speaking in a televised address on the eve of International Quds Day, Abdulmalik al-Houthi said U.S. uninterrupted arms shipments to Israel have exposed its hypocrisy on Gaza. He added, Washington shares the regime's criminal intention to kill off Palestinians. Houthi said that Israel's received largest American military aid since the Second World War. He also slammed certain Arab states for their failure to support Palestinians and their cooperation with the Israeli regime. Without naming such states, he said some of them are even complicit in Israeli crimes by providing aid and goods to Tel Aviv. Al-Houthi also called on Yemenis to pour into the streets in the millions to mark this year's Quds Day on Friday. He emphasized Yemen's stance on supporting Palestinians will never change. Today marks International Quds Day, designated by founder of the Islamic Republic, Imam Khomeini, back in 1979 to remind the world of the Palestinian cause. Our Yemen correspondent Abdul Latif Al-Washali has spoken to people in Sana'a about this event and its importance.
International Quds Day is a day when Muslims show their interest in the key issue of the Islamic world, which is Palestine, especially Al-Quds and Al-Aqsa Mosque. For Yemenis, every day has become a Quds Day since the beginning of the Al-Aqsa flood operation. Al-Quds is in the hearts and minds of Yemenis, not only through the demonstrations, but also through missiles and drones that hit Israel's Eilat port and its maritime navigation.
International Quds Day represents the conscience of humanity in this time full time of crimes. Al-Quds is the focus of resistance, and we must mark this day. This year's International Quds Day is very important since the Israeli war has claimed the lives of more than 32,000 Palestinians.
International Quds Day is considered a day of awareness for the Arab and Muslim nations to remind them of the central issue, which is Palestine. What is happening today in Gaza proves the importance of the Quds Day. The world must be reminded of the oppression against the Palestinian people and the hostility of the Zionist entity.
When Imam Khomeini designated this day, he made Palestine a pivotal issue for the Arab and Muslim nations by raising awareness on Quds. Palestine is the issue of Muslims, and Imam Khomeini designated the last Friday of Ramadan as Quds Day so that people could express their views about Palestine. He looked at the reality of Palestine and its wounds and pains and found that some nations had turned away from this cause, so it was necessary to remind them of Palestine.
International Quds Day is a day when Muslims affirm their unity to defend the Palestinian cause and Islamic sanctities. Marking this day shows that the Islamic resistance will not forget the Palestinian issue. The freedom of the people will not materialize without the liberation of Palestine.
Our correspondent in Belfast has also asked people there about this event and importance to the Palestinian cause.
The Iranian government choosing such a symbolic day as the last Friday in Ramadan as Al-Quds Day and as a day of celebrating solidarity with the Palestinians really shows that solidarity with Palestine is their number one foreign policy priority and has been since the revolution. So I think that Palestinians, especially in these days in midst of war, starvation and genocide, will treasure this act of solidarity more than in any year before.
And I believe fully that the Israeli ambassador should be expelled from Ireland. I believe that everyone has a right to protest and should be on the streets calling for this genocide, this mass murder, not only to be stopped, but we should be calling for Netanyahu to be in The Hague. And the International War Crimes Committee should be taking him for the crimes against humanity that he has created in Gaza. As I said, it's one thing to murder innocent people with bombs and with bullets, but to use hunger, starvation, and famine as a way of murdering and wiping out innocent men, women and children is abhorrent and is the worst crime in humanity in a long, long time.
It is definitely genocide caused by the Zionists, definitely. And it didn't happen on the 7th of October. This has been going on for years. Israel, the Palestinians have been living in an open prison for years and years. And I think it's ridiculous that the West isn't seeing what's happening. Well, they are seeing it, but they're doing nothing about it. And that's what's so frustrating for the people to watch all these children, men, women, wee boys, not getting murdered.
I think it's absolutely disgraceful that the West acts like it does, that the West funds this terrorism. I call it terrorism because that's exactly what it is. It's been terrorism for the last 75 years in Palestine.
Of course it was. We're standing here in West Belfast in Ireland. We are all Palestinians. In our thousands, in our millions, we all need to be Palestinians so that from the river to the sea, that Palestine will be free.
Anti-NATO sentiment continues in Italy to grow as the military organization has marked its 75th anniversary. Many in Italy fear NATO's aggressive posture could escalate the Ukraine conflict into full-scale war in Europe.
Thursday marked 75 years since NATO's founding. Italy has been a NATO member since 1949, the year the North Atlantic Treaty was signed, practically since it became a republic after World War II. On Thursday, a protest was held in Rome in the surroundings of the highly strategic NATO Interforce Summit Operational Command. Protesters said NATO is no longer needed since the USSR was dissolved, adding that the US-led military organization has profoundly changed its nature over the years.
L'incontro della NATO del 99.
NATO's 1999 adoption of a new strategic concept changed everything. The new concept also included the safeguard of political and economic interests and the possibility to act in conflict management and crisis response operations, including those beyond alliance territory. That's when NATO was turned into an offensive organization, a world policeman.
Since the end of World War II, Italy has become the home of more than 120 NATO and American bases. Some are well known, while others are secretly positioned across Italian territory. Italy is the European country with most US and NATO military bases on its soil, followed by Germany and Great Britain. The largest portion of Italian territory that is under NATO military servitude is on the island of Sardinia, where for decades locals have staged protests against the nefarious effects of military exercises both on territory and on the health of people and animals.
On our island, we have recorded a skyrocketing rise in the number of congenital defects in cattle, malformations in animals. But what worries us the most in Sardinia is the correlation between NATO military exercises and a greater incidence of tumors in humans. This is caused by chemical emissions due to military tests.
We've seen how NATO has operated in the Ukraine-Russia conflict. NATO has for years surrounded Russia with its bases, forcing Moscow to military action when it started to flirt with Ukraine. We will never have peace with NATO functioning this way, but only war escalation.
Later on Thursday, Italy's Foreign Minister Antonio Tajani reiterated that Rome is not going to send its troops to Ukraine, hinting at the possibility of resuming relations with Russia in the future. Max Civili, Rome.
Pakistan's authorities have detained dozens of individuals in the aftermath of a protest where demonstrators chanting anti-Israeli slogans set fire to a KFC restaurant in Pakistani-administered Kashmir. Our correspondent Nasir Kazmi reports.
Tempers are running high in Pakistan over Israel's onslaught in Gaza. In a dramatic incident, a KFC restaurant in Pakistan-administered Kashmir was set ablaze during an anti-US-Israel protest. Following the incident, police detained over 50 individuals who were accused of attacking the restaurant in the Mirpur district.
We do not support the burning of KFC, but we want to boycott it as it is in support of genocide. We stand with boycott and we do boycott. We do not want them, we just want them not to fund Israel and help them in their genocide.
The arson comes as U.S.-Israeli genocide in Gaza shows no signs of abating. The regime's attacks on all areas of the besieged territory, including hospitals, schools and aid convoys, continue.
We are already seeing the impact on the economy, on the financial decline of McDonald's and boycott. It's huge. Even in some countries, in Arab countries, those outlets are being closed because nobody is buying it.
Free! Free!
The ongoing genocide in Gaza has fueled anger and frustration among people worldwide, prompting calls for boycotts against entities believed to support Israel financially or politically.
Boycott is something that we are, you know what, this is what we feel from our heart, from inside, that we don't want to support their economy. We don't want to support the companies that are supporting the Israeli soldiers. So, for that, we need to boycott. I know this is not a permanent solution, but we have to boycott.
Authorities are now faced with the challenge of managing the fallout from the incident and preventing further escalation of tensions.
As tempers run high in Pakistan due to the call for boycotting pro-US and pro-Israeli brands, the targeted destruction of a KFC restaurant represents a symbolic reaction of the people, both locally and globally, against US-Israeli genocide in Gaza. Nasik Azmi, Islamabad.
That's it for this. Thank you for joining us and goodbye for now.
Diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
The Limelight.
Amid a surge in torture cases by the Zionist regime forces against Palestinians since October 7, 2023, there is an urgent need for health professionals to properly document such atrocities. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more.
We'll be right back.
Middle East, I wrote, torture remains a pervasive reality in Palestine, where countless individuals have endured unspeakable physical and psychological trauma at the hands of the Zionist regime forces. This has been an especially serious problem since the Gaza war began on October 7, 2023, with Palestinians telling Middle East, I that they have been physically tortured with dogs and electricity, subjected to mock executions, and held in humiliating and degrading conditions. One man described how he was handcuffed, blindfolded, abducted, and detained in a metal cage for 42 days. Addressing such grave human rights violations demands a comprehensive approach, including the development of specialized skills for healthcare professionals tasked with documenting and treating survivors. Trained in the Istanbul Protocol for Torture Documentation, an expert has dedicated himself to equipping fellow professionals with the necessary tools to navigate this challenging terrain. As violence continues to escalate, with torture not restricted to detention centers, but also witnessed in the streets of the occupied Palestinian territories and captured on video, it is more comprehensive than ever to bolster health workers' capacities to document such incidents, thus amplifying the voices of survivors in their pursuit of justice. Palestinians have been systematically oppressed for decades, with more than 800,000 arrested since 1967. Inside Zionist regime detention centers, many have faced brutal physical and psychological abuse that meets the stringent criteria for torture set forth by the United Nations. Key elements of torture include the international infliction of severe mental or physical suffering for a specific purpose, with the involvement of someone acting in an official capacity. The surge in cases since October 7th serves as a stark reminder of the urgent need to document these atrocities and hold perpetrators accountable before the international community. The torture tactics employed by the Zionist regime forces against the Palestinians are as varied as they are barbaric, ranging from crude physical beatings to sophisticated no-touch techniques imported from global interrogation practices. The fabricated regime of Israel has also exported specific torture methods, such as the Palestinian chair stress position. In addition to inflicting excruciating pain through tactics such as suspension and simulated drowning, Israeli regime forces have employed psychological warfare, exploiting cultural sensitivities and individual vulnerabilities to amplify the suffering of their victims. Sleep deprivation is an essential part of psychological torture. Reports of sexual abuse, including rape and forced nudity, underscored the depravity to which detainees are subjected. The insidious combination of physical and psychological torture serves not only to punish, but also to extract coerced confessions. Such practices scar and traumatize survivors and their families, while intimidating the broader Palestinian community. Central to the efficacy of torture is its capacity to shatter the psychological resilience of victims, reducing them to a state of helplessness and dependency. Through systematic degradation and manipulation, interrogators erode the victim's sense of self, replacing it with a pathological identification with their abuser. This insidious dynamic distorts the victim's perception of reality and undermines their ability to articulate their ordeal coherently, long after the physical wounds have healed, survivors grapple with myriad psychological consequences, including traumatic stress disorder, depression, and a profound distrust of others. These enduring psychological scars pose serious challenges to the documentation process as survivors navigate an inner labyrinth of trauma-induced memory deficits, confusion, and emotional distress. They might have difficulty recalling and recounting their experiences. Memory deficits coupled with pervasive fear and distrust often impede their willingness to engage in the documentation process. The very act of revisiting traumatic memories can trigger intense emotional distress or avoidance behavior, further complicating efforts to elicit coherent narratives. As healthcare professionals, the experts must remain attuned to these challenges, employing trauma-informed approaches that prioritize survivors' autonomy and well-being while seeking to uphold their right to truth and justice. In the face of such abhorrent human rights violations, the Istanbul Protocol offers a standardized framework for documenting torture that is grounded in compassion and human dignity. By equipping healthcare professionals with the necessary skills and resources, they can empower torture survivors to reclaim agency over their narratives, amplifying their voices in the pursuit of accountability and redress. As they strive to combat torture and uphold the rights of the victims, they should stand in solidarity with survivors, bearing witness to their pain and advocating tirelessly for a future free from oppression and impunity.
Joining us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
The Israeli regime has shown that it is not interested in reaching a ceasefire deal, as announced by Hamas's senior rep in Lebanon, Osama Hamdan. One reason would be since it would prevent the genocidal aggression and the ethnic cleansing of Palestinians from continuing. Is this what Israel is after? Does the targeting of aid and aid workers also support that? In this edition of The Spotlight, we would look at how the Israeli regime is doing all that it can to extinguish Palestinians on the eve of Quds Day rallies and with the six-month starting date of the U.S. Israeli genocidal war coming up. First, let me introduce our guests for this edition of The Spotlight. Ken Stone, Executive Committee Member at Hamilton Coalition to Stop the War, joins us from Hamilton. Also joining us is Zakir Ahmed Mayet, attorney, activist, and political analyst from Johannesburg.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Taking a look at what I mentioned in the intro, and that were the statements that came from Osama Hamdan, who's the senior rep in Lebanon, based on the most recent developments concerning the genocidal war. One of the most significant aspects of what he made known in his speech was the fact that Hamas is still at the negotiating table when it comes to this ceasefire. In terms of some of the different parameters that were presented, he said that they were still sticking with what they had presented prior. Things like for the Israeli regime forces to be removed from the Gaza Strip, for there to be obviously some kind of route for the residents of the Gaza Strip to return, especially, he noted, the northern part of the Gaza Strip, and for aid to be delivered, amongst many others. But overall, he mentioned the fact that it doesn't seem like Israel is interested in any type of agreement at this point, putting the blame on the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, and also the fact that any type of ceasefire, as mentioned in the intro, would prevent the genocide from continuing. So let's bring in now Ken Stone from Executive Committee, a member of the Hamilton Coalition to Stop the War, who joins us. Ken Stone, welcome. This ceasefire that was mentioned by Osama Hamdan in Beirut, he said squarely the blame falls on Israel, that it's not after reaching a ceasefire, and then blaming the Prime Minister Netanyahu. We know that Netanyahu's political career is hanging on this, but the mere fact that he said Israel is not interested because that would prevent the regime from continuing its genocide speaks volumes. What do you think of his statement there?
First of all, I'd like to thank you for inviting me and wish everybody Ramadan Mubarak. On the question of the ceasefire, Israel does not want a ceasefire for a number of reasons. The first reason is that it wants to ethnically cleanse the Palestinians from Gaza, just as it wants to ethnically cleanse them from the West Bank as well, where they've conducted in the last 6 months some 300 murders of Palestinian residents there. They don't want a ceasefire because they want to destroy they want to destroy the resistance to Israel in the West, in Gaza, which is of course Hamas, part of the axis of resistance to Zionism and U.S. imperialism in West Asia. They'd like very much to wipe out Hamas. So, thirdly, they'd like to take over the Gaza Strip because it has an offshore gas field that Israel would like to exploit. And
okay, looks like your connection with Ken Stone is not working. Let's go to you, Zakir Ahmad. You know, this thing with the World Central Kitchen Convoy, I think we lost actually both. So I was just going to get into the whole issue of the World Kitchen Convoy that was targeted by Israel. The whole scenario regarding that is basically falls into two parts. One, why was this convoy targeted when the coordinates were given to the Israeli regime? And secondly, given the fact that this was U.S.-based and you had nationals on there, such as from the U.K. and from other countries, it doesn't seem like that even prevented Israel from not targeting it. Which brings about then the conclusion that has been made, some say speculation, but it's a conclusion that has been made by many, as to the fact that Israel does not want any type of aid to be distributed inside the Gaza Strip. This then lends a hand to the starvation that's happening more so in the northern part of the Gaza Strip, where it's showing itself. We have upwards, or the average median, of about 700,000 Palestinians who are grappling with life and death because they're starving. I think around 50 so far have died as a result of starvation. But that number can quickly escalate given the fact that the aid that's reaching into the Gaza Strip is not enough. So that's one of the things that needs to be analyzed and dissected. Another aspect of this war, which has been ongoing now in terms of the complicity, is from the U.S. We are going to be looking at how that is fueling the genocide that's taking place. Even on the day that the convoy incident happened and the U.S. President Joe Biden came out and was in a heartfelt message, showed sympathy for what happened, the U.S. signed off on more military assistance. So at this point, that puts into question the sincerity of the U.S., even though many have said that the U.S. is not sincere, that what it says out in the open or in public or to the media is not what it says to the Israeli regime and how it acts with the Israeli regime in terms of the assistance that it gives that. The whole issue of aid, of course, is very pivotal to the existence of Palestinians. We're looking at the aid workers to have been targeted in large numbers. Kent Stone, unfortunately, you got cut off. I believe maybe it's best for you to continue from where you got cut off, if you remember.
I was saying that the that Israel doesn't want a ceasefire for the simple reasons that they would like to ethnically cleanse the Palestinians from Gaza. They would like to destroy the resistance in the form of Hamas. They would like to get their hands on the offshore oil gas fields off Gaza. And they have this colonial project, and they've had it for over a century. They want to create a greater Israel that is clear of the people of Arabs, whom the Israeli government, in the words of Defense Minister Gallant, considers to be subhuman, human animals. So this is the reason that the, besides Netanyahu's own personal ambitions and survival instincts, that the Israeli government is not in favor at all of a ceasefire.
All right. We're going to hopefully touch on some of those topics, because maybe that gives an explanation as to why you're killing so many civilians from the Israeli regime side. But taking a look at the whole World Central Kitchen convoy incident there, Zakir Ahmed, what is the story there? I mean, the coordinates were given to the Israeli regime, yet it was targeted. We're looking at the fact that even Israeli regime spokesperson, I believe, of the army came out and apologized. Didn't do that for the 32,000, 33,000 Palestinians that have been killed. But more and more now, conclusions are being reached that Israel does not want any type of aid, especially food, to be distributed in the Gaza Strip. And of course, with the record number of aid workers to have been killed so far, is that what Israel wants because it wants the genocide to continue?
The strike on the aid workers distributing food, we believe that they had certain tons of food with them at the time and they were transporting them. The entire trip was coordinated with the Israeli regime. They were notified of the route and they had been tracking the convoy for some period of time. Therefore, the argument that this was an accidental strike can be thrown into the bin. This is intentional, but we have to look at the timing. I believe the timing is particularly significant. The incident that preceded this was the attack on the Islamic Republic of Iran's consulate in Damascus. And this is an egregious violation of international law. It is precisely because of the protections of embassies and consulates that we don't have mass violations. For example, Julian Assange, when he was in the Ecuadorian embassy, the foreign powers could not intervene and extract him from there. This underscores the importance of diplomatic sites and access and protections. So when this strike took place in the afternoon, approximately at 5 p.m., Israel needed a distraction. And one of the other distractions that they could conjure up at short notice was to strike this particular aid convoy. We noticed on social media that the attention shifted very quickly from the strikes in Damascus to the atrocities of striking aid workers. This was merely a tactic by Israel to distribute some of the pressure they had obtained or received after they had committed such an egregious act. But going to the other point, Israel has systematically targeted the United Nations Relief Works Agency. It is their campaign to deconstruct every form of aid-giving organization, including this particular one. Their aim is to create a puppet regime. We know that they have made attempts to shape the ground by co-opting tribal leaders, clan leaders, trying to convince them to distribute the aid and to turn their backs on the resistance. This has been openly rejected by the clan leaders, stating very clearly that they would never abandon the resistance and they would never betray them. So this is all part of a grand scheme to deconstruct any aid organization and also to deconstruct UNRWA. But in this particular instance, I believe it was meant to be a distraction to distract from the blatant violations of international law that was committed in Syria in the afternoon.
Well, I was going to get into the Iranian consular building a little later, but let's get into it since our guest mentioned it there, Kent Stone. Of course, if you agree with what our guest there said, whether it was a distraction, or it could also, as some have said, is the Israeli regime feeling defeated, whether it's on the ground in the Gaza Strip and the fact that it is fighting on multiple fronts. In particular, the one that's obviously a big threat to it is Lebanon's Hezbollah movement, and it's also on the receiving end of the resistance groups regionally that are targeting Israel, now more so than ever. In the past week, the Islamic resistance of Iraq, from the Haifa airport to the Haifa refinery, I believe, or that was before. But anyways, it's on the receiving end of it. And the past week is just one example of it. Do you think that it's because of that that it wants to detract the world and then start a regional war, where some say, to bring in the U.S.?
Well, I agree that what the Israelis are trying to do by attacking the consulate in Damascus, which is a blatant violation of international law and actually a casus belli and grounds for a war, grounds for war, an act of war, is because Israel would like to change the narrative. Israel is desperately striking out in all directions because it is not winning the war in Gaza against Hamas. Hamas is still holding its own. It is not winning the war against Hezbollah. Hezbollah is responding tit for tat to all the provocations by Israel. In the Red Sea, Ansarallah has turned the port of Eilat into a ghost town. So Israel is getting more and more desperate and is looking to strike out against Iran and to change the narrative. The narrative of the world now is that Israel is a settler colonial state, a racist enterprise, something that doesn't deserve to exist any more than the apartheid regime in South Africa. This does not mean that all the Israelis have to be wiped out. It means that the government of the apartheid regime in Israel has to go and be replaced, hopefully, with a Palestinian state in all of historic Palestine. The U.S. Is in this deeply because of hegemony. The U.S. had undisputed hegemony over West Asia for about 75 years following World War II. And right now, they only have one reliable ally left there, a really reliable ally, and that is the State of Israel. So they are working hand in glove with the State of Israel to resupply it with all the munitions that they could possibly want, and even send more aircraft, the recently announced long-range attack aircraft, which could be used, right, theoretically, against Iran. So the U.S. is behind this, and the U.S., I'm sure, gave the green light to the attack on Damascus because they, too, want to change the narrative and make Iran the bad guy in West Asia, when actually it's the U.S. and Israel.
Well, you know, if there's anything that needs support of that statement made there by Ken Stone, Zakir Ahmad, is the fact that on the same day that the World Kitchen Workers were killed, the U.S. actually agreed to more military aid for Israel. So that kind of shows exactly where the U.S. intentions are. And what the U.S. President Joe Biden says out in the public, as I said before, is not what's going on behind closed doors. The military aid is very pivotal because without it, Israel can't continue what it's doing. We're looking at an average of between 52 Palestinians being killed every 24 hours, let alone the structural damage that's taking place there. What is U.S.'s goal when it comes to this genocidal war. Is it drawing up plans, military plans, with Israel as to how it proceeds?
Most definitely. The integration between Israel and the United States reached its pinnacle during the Trump administration. We know that there was an integration of Israel into the central command structures, and there was an integration of air defense radars, etc., during this particular period. So this is an old relationship that has only grown from strength to strength. And the fact that the United States has provided diplomatic cover to Israel when the most grotesque violations have been taking place, despite the ICJ's ruling that there's a plausible case for genocide, despite the fact that they have not complied with the United Nations Security Council resolution, which the United States abstained from. And this was a plan. It was by design. However, even that, Israel was not willing to come to the table for. This is an indication that both the United States and Israel are working together towards a regional restructuring. It is very clear that Israel is an extension of U.S. foreign policy within the region and a projection of American power. When we see these weapons packages going forward, and if we look at what was given, it was F-35s that will be converted to F-35Is, the Israeli variant. You will look at the bombs 1,800 and a few others. There's conversions of these dumb bombs to smart weapons with glide kits. These indicate precision strike capabilities. This is not for Gaza. Gaza has been pulverized. They've dropped the equivalent of between 2 to 4 Nagasaki Hiroshima size bombs on Gaza. And it's very clear when you look at the aerial footage and you study the maps of Gaza and the satellite imagery that there's not much left of Gaza, and yet the resistance continues to organically grow from the ground and continues to defeat Israeli armor and personnel on a daily basis. So it therefore begs the question, what was this for? And I think you've hit the nail on the head when you look at the timing. You look at the strike on the consulate, the respected general. I believe his janazah was held this evening, the funeral prayer. And this is an indication that they wanted to strike the individual that was in charge of the Northern Front and as well as ground forces in Syria. They then proceeded to strike these aid workers, and then you get the aid packages that are coming in. It's to try and shift the Islamic Republic as well as the axis of resistance away from the war theory of attrition and destruction over time to a more offensive war. What it does open up, though, is that Israel is a state that has become a lunatic state. It is committing genocide, number one. Number two, it holds itself up to no rules in terms of international law, violating a diplomatic site and killing such a high-ranking individual. The next best thing that they could do is assassinate a president or a senior minister. That is how ridiculous the actions of Israel are, and yet the United States has failed to rein them in. Therefore, I look at the United States and Israel as one in the same, and the defeat of Israel will be the defeat of the empire. What we need to understand is this is not about Gaza. It's not about even the axis of resistance. It's about the empire versus the global south, those that are oppressed versus those that are arrogantly demonstrating their power and oppressing those around the world. That's the real battle we're facing today.
Yeah, Ken Stone, now, the reshaping of the landscape of the region, I believe, is one of the things that you mentioned that may be one of the reasons, if not a key reason, for Israel to continue its genocide in the Gaza Strip. We know that it wants to carve out a buffer zone and wants participation of certain Arab countries. That's not going to happen based on what the response has been. But there's another aspect to this, which is this trade route. This has been discussed and presented before, the India, Middle East, Europe, economic corridor. And I don't believe that that's going to happen either, because it has to involve Saudi Arabia. And at this point, Saudi Arabia is not very receptive to what Israel has done. So do you think that Israel is going to continue with these aspirations in mind in terms of trade, for example, to basically want to push the Palestinians out of the Gaza Strip and then maybe go through with that trade route?
Well, first of all, I'd like to say I agreed with every word of your other guest about the U.S. and Israel trying to change the landscape of the what we called, or the British called, the Middle East, West Asia, and North Africa. And they have been doing that since the war on terror was announced by George Bush. Of course, it was not a war on terror. It was a war of terror against the mainly Muslim people of West Asia, go all the way from Afghanistan, across Iraq and Syria, and of course, all the way to Libya. And that plan has not gone away. The U.S. has murdered millions of people in that war of terror. And they have spent trillions of dollars, and they are still occupying Syria, the eastern third of Syria. Their troops are still in Iraq. They have bases circling. They have bases circling Iran, and they are in Palestine, working their best to help the Israelis create the so-called Greater Israel. So yes, they are still continuing their project in West Asia.
So, Kermit, I'm going to end with you. We're looking at a good day tomorrow. So I'm wondering how that's going to transpire, given the fact that Iran's leader has said that we need to have this support of people around the world, which obviously the Palestinian cause has been getting. What is your projection about what's going to happen tomorrow when it comes to the good day rallies?
I think it's going to be one of the most important Quds days that we will ever experience. The battle is raging on. It's the battle not just for the soul of Palestine, it's the soul of each and every one of us. Those that believe in truth, those that believe in justice, those that believe that there is accountability in this world and that one cannot believe that you are superior to another. And I believe this is going to be a watershed moment in South Africa, Johannesburg. I know that there are Quds Day events and protests taking place outside the U.S. consulate. The United States and Israel is being viewed as one in the same. These are the perpetrators of atrocities, genocide, and violations of all peoples around the world. The Israelis have also become victim to the apartheid mentality and colonialism, as South African, white South Africans were also victims of that, indoctrinated and brought onto the wrong side of history. Al-Quds Day is going to define the world today, tomorrow, and I believe that it is important for each and every one to participate in whichever way they can.
Thank you for that. Zakir Ahmed Mayet, we appreciate it. Attorney, activist, and political analyst from Johannesburg. Ken Stone, sorry, we're just out of time. I can give you about 15 seconds if you want, only.
It'll be a defining moment tomorrow and on Saturday in Toronto as well, because we're marshaling lots of people in view of the fact that the police attacked a peaceful pro-Palestinian protest last Saturday.
All right. Thank you for that. Kent Stone, Executive Committee Member, Hamilton Coalition to Stop the War. Thank you. With that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight. For Mika Vitagwe and the team, it's goodbye.
Human values are alien to the Zionist regime. Imam Khomeini. Everybody together, unanimously, with one voice, present at the glorious demonstration of God's Day.
An-Naqi means the pure, the immaculate, the clean. Al-Hadi means the guide. All the Imams came for guidance.
As-salamu alaykum ya ahl bayt al-nubuwa wa mawdi' al-risala wa mukhtalaf al-malaik.
Peace be upon the directors of right guidance, the lanterns in darkness, the patterns of piety.
This is Dialogue, an introduction into the most important dialogues and conversations of Imam Ali ibn Muhammad al-Hadi alayhi salam.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. Imam Ali ibn Muhammad al-Hadi alayhi salam was a pure source of wisdom and knowledge. Despite his young age, he showed what divinely gifted knowledge really looks like. Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam was the direct descendant of the Messenger of Allah, peace and blessings upon him and his holy household. Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam was also the 10th divinely appointed Imam, and he was the 10th divinely appointed successor of the Messenger of Allah, peace and blessings upon him. Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam was also the son of the 9th divinely appointed Imam, Imam Muhammad ibn Ali al-Jawad alayhi salam. After Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam answered with the answers of an expert the most difficult of questions posed to him by the Shia scholars and jurisprudents, the Shia leaders at that time had more faith and certainty now of what they had previously believed, that a divinely appointed Imam must have the most knowledge and he must be the most knowledgeable one of his time, regardless of whether he is young or old. And so the knowledge, virtue, and the delving into the sciences of the Holy Quran and the Sunnah of Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam astonished the minds and sparked meetings and gatherings in all parts of the Muslim world. At this moment, we invite you to listen to parts of the Arabic text of Ziyarat Jamiatul Kabira by Imam Hadi alayhi salam, along with its English translation. Please stay tuned.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. As-salamu ala a'immatil huda wa masabih at-tuja wa a'lam at-tuqa wa dawin nuha.
In the name of Allah, the Most Compassionate, the Most Merciful. Peace be upon the directors of right guidance, the lanterns in darkness, the patterns of piety, the owners of understanding, the endued with thoughts, the havens of the peoples, the inheritors of the prophets, the perfect specimen, the most excellent call, and the arguments of Allah against the inhabitants of the world, the hereafter and the former world. Allah's mercy and blessings too be upon you all.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. As-salamu ala mahal.
Peace be upon the exponents of the recognition of Allah, the centers of Allah's blessing, the essence of Allah's wisdom, the keepers of Allah's secrets, the bearers of Allah's book, the successor of Allah's prophet, and the progeny of Allah's messenger. May Allah send blessings upon him and his household. Allah's mercy and blessings too be upon them.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Peace be upon the Imams, the leaders, the guides, the chiefs, the authorities, the defenders, the protectors, the people of the reminder, the men in authority, the left ones by Allah, His select, His party, the case of His knowledge, His argument, His path, His light, His proof. Allah's mercy and blessings to be upon them.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back. It's an honor and a blessing to have you with us. You're listening to Dialogue on IRIB English Radio. So, dear friends, we are talking about the dialogues of the 10th Divinely Appointed Imam, Imam Ali ibn Muhammad al-Hadi alayhi salam. So, what an honor to be speaking about such a beautiful and auspicious personality. When it comes to the dialogues of Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam, there is a really beautiful dialogue in which His Eminence, of course, is talking to one of His